This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
And a good Friday, and it is a football Friday, which is something we've been, you know, desperate for a very, very, very long time. And football's back yesterday, and we can't wait to discuss it. We're going to spend a lot of time. We're going to do a frenzy, and Paul Feinbaum, and RJ Bell, and all those things. And, of course, ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests on DCR appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And we'll get to the football, I promise you, but we'd be remiss, we'd be foolish, especially here in all places of New York, not to start out the show with what today is. And today is a solemn day, and it's a day of remembrance, and it's a day of just, you know, pain. And it was awful 19 years ago. It still feels difficult today, and that's where we start. Not 9/11. Now, next year, Yankees Mets will be playing on this day, which will be the 20-year anniversary, and probably very surreal, and it'll be 20 years, but it's 19 years today. And I got to tell you, Chris, we're going to get into sports. We're going to do that all morning, obviously, but we have to start the show here. And, you know, it's 19 years ago, and it doesn't feel that long ago. It's still, the wound is still very much fresh and open for me.
Well, it is, Dave, and it's something that we'll never forget. And you said it perfectly. I think today is a day of remembrance. We remember the victims that lost their lives in that cowardly attack, and we remember the sacrifices that the first responders made to try to get people out of harm's way at Ground Zero. Like, this is something that we'll never forget, and we can't thank them enough for what they did on that day and what they did in the wake of that tragedy in terms of trying to get this city back on its feet. I remember when that happened, I was in college, and I was in a frenzy trying to call my parents and make sure that they were okay, and calling the rest of my family that was up in the tri-state area and making sure that everybody was okay. And I just remember in that time, there was this overwhelming sense of solidarity and unity throughout our country. We found ourselves in the middle of a war, and it felt like everybody had one another's back. And I look at where we're at now as a country, finding ourselves in the middle of a war against racism and inequality, and it doesn't feel like we have that same type of solidarity, which we all recognize is what's necessary in order for us to win this particular war. And so I'm a little bit disappointed. Again, I don't want to take away from the remembrance of what happened in 9/11 and the sacrifices and those that lost their lives, but I can't help but think of where we're at as a country right now. Think about the sacrifices that those folks made 19 years ago, and think about where we're at now. And I just feel like it's a sad state of affairs, because we should be much better than what we really are.
Well, because you saw how strong this country is when it's unified. I mean, that was, and this is a day, and we all know exactly where we are, where we were on this day. You know, I was up at training camp. I was talking to my wife this morning. She was actually 10 blocks away working when this happened. This is a day that we can't forget. Mm-mm. Because, you know, the people that lost loved ones and friends, the, you know, almost 2,800 people that were killed in New York, the 184 people that died at the Pentagon, the 40 in Pennsylvania. We can't forget that, because they're still dealing with the pain of that day. And so are the first responders that continue to deal with the ramifications of being the ones that headed into the buildings to try to save lives.
Probably knowing what their ultimate demise would be, and regardless of that, still running into those buildings. That's what we remember, right? The amount of heroism that we saw that day. There's a piece that ESPN did, Tom Rinaldi voiced, called The Man in the Red Bandana. I don't know if you've seen it, who was a kid who had just graduated college. He went to BC. He was a big-time college lacrosse player, and he was known to his family and friends as he would walk around with a red bandana all the time. And he was up there at some investment company, and people, after they got out, weeks later, months later, they said, who helped you? Just some guy with a red bandana. And they never knew. And I think his name was Wells Crowther. And they never knew. And then they put this documentary together about how many people he saved. And there were so many people like that, that ran into those buildings, that saved, that helped people 19 years ago today. And that's the kind of thing that we absolutely cannot forget today.
You can't forget it, because there are people still to this day that are dealing with the consequences of running into those buildings, of being the first responders. I was reading an article this morning. At least 18,000 people have been diagnosed with a 9/11 related cancer. Mm-hmm. 18,000 people, Dave. Mm. That are dealing with the ramifications still today, 19 years later.
Yeah. And you've seen those and remember, they told them that you didn't need to wear a mask and everything was fine, and how awful that was. But you've seen what Jon Stewart has done and gone in front of Congress and you know, won battles. And it's still, I mean, this will never go away. This will, you know, there are people, my dad's generation, my mom's generation, who look back and said, you know, D-Day or December 7, 1941, Pearl Harbor, any of those things, that's our day, right? You know, September 11, 2001, that is our day. And we have to remember it, because if you don't remember it, then you forget, and then it doesn't move on from generation to generation, because we're not going to be here forever. So it is important today to discuss. And I was actually pleased last night, Ben came home, and I've asked him in the past, how much 9/11 stuff do you do at school? And he said, none. And this is the first year that he came home and he had to write out 30 questions that he wanted answered about 9/11. And we went over it and we really kind of dissected little pieces. And he said, were you scared? I said, we were terrified. I said that we were absolutely, New York especially, was terrified. What was coming next? You know, what kind of trouble were we going to be in? Everyone was scared to fly. So I am glad that at least they're teaching it in school now, so that the next generation who wasn't here for that day understands what that was like.
Yeah, I was actually proud of you know, Milo's school and Ella's school. They actually, you know, did a 9/11 tribute, and all the kids, you know, their assignment was you watch the 9/11, and he's only 5 years old, and she's almost four. But I mean, they this morning watched the 9/11 tribute and asked a bunch of questions, and I answered the questions. So I mean, it's something, you're right, you're 100% right. This is something that can't ever be forgotten. It's got to be passed on, you know, generation to generation.
Well, it's a defining moment, right? Like I think you said, Rick, that it showed how strong we can be as a country when we all come together. And I think that's important to always remember, because we're capable of being able to overcome a lot of things when we come together, when we unite, when we stand in solidarity. And that's just one of those lessons that you always have to have, because you know that you're capable of being able to do it. Once you do something, you know that you can do it again, no matter what you're up against, no matter how dark it may seem, no matter how difficult it may be, we know that we're up for the task. And with that tragedy that happened, I mean, you saw the best of what America could be. You did. But in, you know, recent events, we've also seen the worst of what America can be. And that's why I can't get past, you know, the solidarity that we showed then and not being able to show that now with what we're going through with the fight for equality. And watching the game last night and listening to the fans boo during the moment of silence for social justice and a show of solidarity between the Texans and the Chiefs, that to me was something that was inexplicable. It was something that was inexcusable. I just don't understand what there was to boo about in that moment. It wasn't like the players were taking a knee. It wasn't anything like that. It was just the players locking arms and the NFL acknowledging the fight for social justice and recognizing that it's going to take all of us in order to win this particular battle in this country. The fact that the fans in Arrowhead Stadium would take it to that place where they felt like they should boo the players, that to me is something that we all need to express outrage about, because that's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, that was just stupidity at its finest. I mean, that made absolutely zero sense to anybody.
You know what it did for me, Rick? It helped me realize that this was never about the flag. It was never about the anthem. It was never about the military. This was about people using whatever they could in order to be dismissive of the overarching point that Colin Kaepernick and others were trying to make about race in this country. That's what it was. Because at that point, when the crowd at Arrowhead Stadium decided to boo those players when they did that, that's just saying we don't want to hear it. We want to be willfully ignorant. We don't want to acknowledge the problem that this country has with race. Just we don't want the messaging from you guys. We want you guys to shut up and play football.
Yeah, just go away. Just go out there and play football, because
we don't want to be bothered with it.
Yeah, but it just highlights your stupidity, in my opinion. Like, you don't even know what you're booing. Like, I mean, you have no idea what you're booing. Like, it was a sign of, I mean, it was a show of solidarity. It was unity between, you know, two teams. Yeah, they're two teams that, you know, as soon as the ball kicks off, they're going to be, you know, trying to kill each other, because that's the nature of football. But in that moment, it was black, it was white, it was, I mean, you name it. It was everyone standing arm in arm to show that, you know, this is, we are unified as human beings. Like that wasn't, you know, kneeling for the flag or anything else. I don't know. I don't just understand. Like that just,
yeah,
that for me is
to,
you have no idea
know,
what you're doing.
Wouldn't you love to know the people that boo? Like what's your rationale behind booing? That we're saying?
I don't think they know. I don't even think if you asked them, I don't even think they would know. Like why are you booing? I don't know.
Just because the guy next to me booed, but why?
Maybe.
Why is the one guy why is the guy that starts to boo? What is the rationale behind it? That players and people are showing that they're unified?
Because you're
all
ignorant.
It was?
Well, because you're ignorant. Because you're willfully ignorant at that point. Because you have no idea what's going on.
So you're just a sheep that's following the other sheep?
Exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Of all the things to boo, you chose that moment. Where
yeah,
it was about let's lock arms in solidarity as human beings. That's what we're gonna boo.
That's what
really?
That's what I can't figure out. Like in that moment, what are you opposed to? Like what are you against? Like what? Why did you feel the need to have that negative reaction? You know what I'm saying?
I don't think they could answer that question.
That kind of feeling for you, where you felt like you had to boo in that moment.
I don't even think they could answer that question.
Well, they can't answer that question and feel comfortable with the answer that's going to come out of their mouth. That's the reality of it, Rick. That's what it is. Let's just call it what it is. Racism exists in America, and there are some people that like it this way. They want to maintain this level of privilege. They're not interested in equality. That's what you're saying to me. That's what you're saying to black and brown Americans when you decide to boo in that moment. I know we'll get to it later, but that's why I loved what the Miami Dolphins did yesterday in coming out with that video.
And you wonder why they love their head coach.
It's not about, you know, performative allyship. It's not about, okay, being seen trying to be an advocate for black and brown Americans in this fight. It's not about, you know, it's not about the next performance. It's not about the next gesture. It's not about fluff. It's about doing things that actually lead to the change that we want to see. And listen, man, in the wake of George Floyd, you would just think that we would be in a different place, in a different space when it comes to these types of demonstrations by the players before the games. And yet we're still at the point where it's something that's polarizing. And that's the part that I can't understand. I can't get my mind around.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, it's disappointing. It's saddening because I want to believe in the best of this country. I believe this country has the ability, the potential to live up to the ideals that are spelled out in the Constitution. We have that in us. You can't say we didn't have it in us because I seen it on display in 9/11 in 2001. I saw it. So I know it exists. But we're not going to be able to do that, Dave, when it comes to every single issue that affects every single American until we all take it personally when it comes to this particular fight, when it comes to this particular war.
Yeah, that's the frustrating part. I think that really is for me the saddest part. We're still having these conversations, and they're important conversations. To what they did yesterday,
It'll never make sense.
It doesn't make sense because it's ignorant. If the intent was like I want to show people that I am opposed to, you know, social equality and everything else. Why would you choose that moment? It doesn't even make any sense to boo that. If that was the message you were trying to send. Like, that wasn't the time to boo. Like, I don't even understand what you were trying to accomplish in that situation.
We can analyze it and dissect it till we're blue in the face. It's never going to make sense to us. We're never going to be able to rationalize.
But I can understand why
the mind of people like that.
I can understand why Canty gets frustrated because, you know, 19 years ago, to how we opened the show, you saw when this country is unified, how powerful and how strong we can be, and it shouldn't take a terrorist attack or something like that to bring us together. Like that shouldn't be the reason why we all come together as a country.
Hmm.
I mean, it doesn't need to be a tragedy that brings us all together. You've shown everyone what we're capable of doing, and that we got to get closer to that as opposed to where we're at now, where we're so divided.
Oh, it couldn't be more divided. But that's a long time ago, and you say it shouldn't take a tragedy, and yeah, of course you're right, it shouldn't. But I think in many ways it does.
But that's why we say never forget, Dave.
That's right.
It was a long time ago, but that's why we say never forget. We can't forget the lessons that we learned in that time, and that's including seeing the American spirit on display and seeing us all unite, come together in solidarity to stand up against a common enemy.
And I don't you remember how proud you were to be an American back then? Like, I remember in the days after that, the 12th, the 13th, the 14th, it doesn't matter your political affiliation. When George Bush came to New York City and took that megaphone and spoke to everyone out there that was working and digging through that rubble, we all felt this tremendous sense of pride. And I don't think a lot of us feel that today.
You know what, David? It's interesting that you bring that up, because I remember feeling that. And I remember Al Groh stood up in front of my team when I was at the University of Virginia, and he said, we have to be a part of getting America back on its feet, and we're going to play our small role with sports and athletics, and you know how that always brings folks together. And I remember the following game after 9/11, after that tragedy took place, we had the decal of the American flag on the back of our helmets. And I can remember feeling so proud in that moment to be able to put that helmet on with the American flag and run out of the tunnel and play a football game. You're absolutely right. It meant something. We all felt that level of patriotism, that sense of responsibility, of duty to help our country pick itself up and become become stronger than we were before the attack.
You know what you just said, Chris, is that's the most important thing, though, is, and I think that's why sports brings people together. And I think, you know, unfortunately, sometimes it's because, you know, if you root for the Giants, it doesn't matter. Like, I mean, how many times have you gone to a game? Like, I remember going to when the Mets made their run to the World Series. Like, I'm at those games and I'm high-fiving people. I mean, you know, buying beer. I've never met these people in my entire life. But it's, and we have, you know, we're both rooting for the same team. Rooting for the same team. But it's because we're rooting against the common enemy. Like in 9/11, we all had a common enemy, so we unified. Mm-hmm. I think what the players last night were trying to show you when they decided to have that moment where they all locked arms is, yeah, I mean, the Chiefs are going up against the Houston Texans. We're supposed to be enemies. Like we're trying to, you know, Kansas City's trying to beat Houston. Kansas City Chiefs fans are rooting against the Houston Texans. They have a common enemy in that situation. But in that moment, they could push all that aside because, I mean, we're all human beings and we're all together. In that moment, you could push all that aside. Yeah, it's going to be a game and we're going to be going against each other. But in that moment, we're all one.
Ironically, I remember, I don't know if you guys remember who the Giants played the first game back. So it happened on 9/11, which was a Tuesday. And then the week right after that coming weekend, there were no games. And then the week after they played. The Giants played in Kansas City, right? Ironically enough. And I will always remember the Giants taking the field. And we know what Kansas City Chiefs fans are. They're rabid. They're crazy. They're 75,000 fans. Huge standing ovation for the New York Giants. Huge. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the enemy coming into your building. Huge. Applauding them. Like, and it was so special and was so memorable to me. It's 19 years ago. And you know, now you look at where we are. Where players are, you know, trying to unify last night, and you get, for whatever reason, we're not okay with that now.
But I think it's why at the end of playoff series, guys shake hands. Because, I mean, once all that stuff is put aside, the series is over. It's, I mean,
right,
because
there is ultimate respect, right?
Because you respect each other, yes. And I just don't, it frustrates me because I have no idea. I mean, I'm watching that game last night and I'm like, what are we trying to accomplish here with this booing? I don't understand. Like, you don't even know what, you obviously don't understand what the players are trying to accomplish by having this moment. You're just ignorant to it. And you just decided you're going to boo for no reason.
That's right. That's right. But you know what? That's what we saw. That from the current state of the NFL, of where we are now, because we haven't had a game since pre any of this stuff, the first taste you get as a fan is that. And you're disgusted by it.
I'd be interested to see what the Kansas City Chiefs do about that over the course of the weekend or before the next home game. Because they got to issue some kind of statement about what they want to be about as an organization. And if that's what we're choosing to represent, then our fans should be in lockstep with that. I mean, this is a fight that everybody should be on board with. Like Rick talks about it all the time. This is nothing controversial. Fighting for equality and fighting against racism is something that every American should try to be a part of in their own small way. This isn't something that should be polarizing, and yet it is. And so when you say you don't understand it, it doesn't make any sense to me, it makes perfect sense to me. It makes perfect sense. There are some people that just aren't willing to go there. There's some people that want to maintain the way things are. They don't want to see change. They don't want to see equality. And it's sad. It really
is sad. And it's angering. if that's
but it's lazy. My point is it's lazy. Like, you're choosing to be ignorant. Like, the guy, the face of the NFL, the guy most responsible for bringing, I mean, and you raised the banner last night. The guy, the MVP of the Super Bowl, who brought you a championship, it was his idea to do it.
You're right.
The guy whose jersey you wear that you root for, who's the best
right.
player
who
in the NFL.
Revere, right.
That you
who
revere.
You revere, who's a walking god in Kansas City.
That would probably, that you would make the godfather of your children, if he was willing to do it, you're booing. And it was his idea. How stupid is that? I don't know, man. I just...
Yeah,
I was almost. I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed. I was almost
embarrassing. That's why, because it was embarrassing. Let's get to a couple calls on this. We'll break. We'll come back, and we'll start to break down some of the NFL. And boy, the Chiefs looked really, really good last night.
Yeah, they did. Yeah,
right?
They did.
Let's go to Chris in Manhattan. They look great. Chris, you're first up on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey guys, good morning. You know, you guys are having a very interesting conversation about humanity, and just in listening, you know, for about 10 minutes where you started, you know, with the unity. You know, that was shown on September the 11th and following, and then skipping forward to now, you know, where you have a certain segment of the population, you know, that is actually vocal, you know, in its displeasure, you know, of athletes, bringing forth, you know, this unifying gesture. Man, guys, that's humanity, man. I hate to say it. And the thing is, you know, and as an African-American, and I'm listening to, you know, some of the, is it frustration in your voice, Chris? Part of it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, it's frustration. Frustration.
The same person who's probably booing. When you get attacked by a foreign country, an outside entity, this is the same person who's going to want to be your tag team partner, who's going to want you to stand shoulder to shoulder, back to back. Who's going to want to jump in? You know, want to jump in your trench and say, "Hey, let's go, brother. Let's go fight them." Time out, man, my man. You've been kicking my behind for I don't know how long. Now all of a sudden, you know, we have this outside force, and now you want to be together. No, I don't think this. I hate to say it this way. I don't think this is the trench you want to jump in, because I'm gonna look at you first. Because at the end of the day, when all of this is over, I know I'm going to have to see you again. And isn't that something that Muhammad Ali said in, wasn't that the mid-60s?
Yeah.
In 2020?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, some of these things you're going to want to remember who's on what side of the line in peacetime. Because, no, man, nah, man, you can't jump in my boat when they're like, hey, they're coming for us. No, they're coming for you, Jack, because you can't get in this boat now.
But here's the thing, and I hear exactly what you're saying, but black and brown Americans have always believed in the best of what this country could be.
Exactly.
And despite all of the things that we've gone through, first of all, getting here before the inception of America, but all the things that we've gone through from then till now, you've had black and brown Americans fighting for this country in conflicts willingly because
That's
they
right.
believed in the best of what this country could be. They believed in the words that were spelled out in the Constitution, knowing full well that America didn't always live up to its end of the bargain in terms of how they treated us in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hear exactly what you're saying, but when you go back to 9/11 and you see the unity and the solidarity and us working hand in hand.
Right, we can
do it. In order to get us back to some sense of normalcy, that's one of those things. It's like we're capable of doing that. And when you talk about the frustration in the black and brown voices that you hear, the frustration comes from the fact that we know America can be better, and yet we're choosing not to be. And that's the part that we can't get past, but that's why it's going to take all of us in order to move the needle closer to where we should be when it comes to equality. That's why it's going to take all of us. This is not the time to point fingers at other people. This is the time to stand up and say who we are, and probably just as important, who we're not.
Yeah, Chris, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Let's go to James in Jersey. James, you're next up on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, how are you guys doing today? Before I get to my point, I just wanted to tell a quick story. I'm 25, so I remember 19 years ago, I was actually in first grade, my elementary school. And I'm in a small town called Palisades Park. So it's right across the GW, right next to Fort Lee, if you know the area. And as a little kid, you know, I'm just in school and I don't remember much, but I remember all the teachers running into my classroom to look out through the window. And I remember very vividly someone saying, you could see the plane right there. And as a seven-year-old, you know, you don't get what that means. But then later in the day, I found out what happened as my aunt came, picked me up early from school. And, you know, I saw the news, saw the TV, and that's when reality kind of hit. But not really, because as a kid, you think it's a movie or something. But to get to my quick point real quick, I myself personally wasn't shocked at the reaction in Kansas City. I understand what everyone's doing about unity, and it's great, but we're talking about Kansas City, Missouri. Probably, I've never been there personally, but if I had to assume it's probably one of a hot spot in racism in our country due to the fact that, I mean, that's where Mike Brown got shot. That's where you got Ferguson, and they're still struggling to get some clean water. So I understand why people are upset, but it's kind of just taking me a shock that people are shocked that it happened, the booing.
Yeah, but what do you? But here's the question. But here's the question. And maybe we shouldn't be shocked. What exactly are you booing? Like in that moment, what were you booing? No one was kneeling for the anthem. No one was disrespecting the flag. No one was. They were standing arm in arm together as human beings in a moment. Like what was and what was being disrespected in that moment?
It's just their pride being disrespected.
How? Like I said, James, really? I mean, tell it. What sense of their pride is being disrespected? That human beings are saying we stand together?
I mean, I'm not defending them at all.
No, I know you're not. I know you don't take that side, but we can't fathom what they're. It almost feels, Rick, like they, and thanks for the call, James, like they were so uninformed and ignorant that they were just booed because that's just what you do.
No, it's almost like they went to the game with the mindset that both teams would be on the field during the national anthem and there was going to be kneeling so they could boo. And the fact that only one person on Kansas City kneeled and Texas State in the Houston Texans stayed in their locker room, they had nothing to boo. So, okay, we'll choose this moment now to get this off our chests.
Right.
And then after they booed, they had a moment of cultural appropriation where they did the tomahawk chop as the Chiefs chant before they actually play the game.
You can't make it up.
You can't make it up,
Dave. You can't make it up.
You really can't. It's unbelievable.
It really is. I mean, you're right. I mean, you can't make it. It's like we're living in a big sitcom, right?
No, you can't make it up. You can't make it up. I mean, it's almost impossible.
Like, let's boo them for locking arms, and then immediately when that dies down, we will do the tomahawk chop.
Yeah, but it's almost like we're a caricature of who we really are.
Or is this who we really are?
I can't believe this is who we really are, Dave. I can't. Because I saw who we really are. I saw what I want to believe who we really are 19 years ago. That's why I don't want to say that's who we are now. And you always talk about it, Dave. Ignorance screams. Mm-hmm. And this is just one of those moments where it's like it's louder than ever when you recognize those folks booing in the crowd had no idea what they were in opposition to. And really, when you think about it, there was nothing to be opposed to. We were supposed to be having a moment of unity, a moment of silence to stand in solidarity in the fight for social justice. How could anybody be against that?
But that's why today is so important. Because you know, when you're having one of those days where it's just like, this country is a mess, we're so divided, you know, what's it going to take? Maybe it's just, this is how it's going to always be. This is the day where you can look back 19 years ago and say, and you can, it's a shining example of how great this country can be. It gives you hope.
It does. It does. You saw the worst of what the world could be 19 years ago today, right now. And then you saw the best of what this country could be moving forward. You're right. Mm-hmm. 100%.
All right, guys, let's get on the field. Last night, I mean, the Chiefs fell behind 7-0, and then they absolutely dominated. I thought that the Texans were brutal. I mean, their game plan was very strange. They were very conservative. They didn't take shots downfield. But what we saw was what where we left off last year, Chris, and that is this Kansas City offense is daunting, has a million weapons, and the running back at LSU looked sensational last night.
No, Clyde Edwards-Helaire stole the show. Rick always talks about don't be the show, steal the show. Well, that was the rookie running back for the Chiefs last night. I mean, being able to have that kind of debut where you go for a 138 and a touchdown, and you saw that explosive play that he had at the beginning of the third quarter. Like, it's just what he's going to bring to that offense is just going to make them that much harder to stop. I mean, when it comes to the Kansas City Chiefs, when you're playing them, you don't have any margin for error. And I know you talked about how you didn't necessarily love Billy O's game plan. I thought the game plan was solid. They just didn't execute. Like, in the first half, you saw that they were trying to shorten the game. They were going to use David Johnson and Duke Johnson. They were going to shorten the game as much as they could with the running game, keep the clock moving, control time of possession, and then try to take advantage of opportunities when you worked it in the plus territory. And then defensively, their D coordinator, Anthony Weaver, he was going to stay in those two high coverage looks and force Pat Mahomes to check the ball down, force the Chiefs to run the football and to drive the length of the field and be patient. And I thought that the Chiefs did that, but when you have opportunities like what Eric Murray had at the beginning of the second quarter when he was diving to try to intercept that ball, you got to take advantage of them because the Chiefs' offense isn't going to give you many of them. When you get those chances, you got to cash in. The same with your offense. When you get opportunities, you got to make the most of them, and then you got to have better clock management, Bill O'Brien, at the end of the first half. You can't leave that kind of time on the clock and give them that kind of field position after the missed field goal where they can set themselves up to put points on the board before you go into the half. You can't do that. But again, it comes down to the Chiefs being really, really good, having that kind of talent to go along with the scheme and the play calling. They're just going to be a tough out. I honestly don't know how you stop this team. If it's not by negative plays in the ways of sacks and turnovers, I don't know how you stop that team.
Dave, you said tough to stop?
I mean, yeah, impossible.
Maybe impossible to stop.
Yeah.
I mean, again, Chris made a good point. I mean, when you go up against Kansas City, we all realize they're the most explosive offense in the National Football League. Yeah. What you're trying to do is limit possessions, right? Like, if you can control time of possession, you give yourself an opportunity. If the Chiefs can run the football the way they ran the football last night, mm-hmm, and win the time of possession battle, you can't beat them. You're not going to beat them.
No, and how much did it pain you? I mean, I was thinking of you last night. What am I going to say? How much did it pain you this? Do you know what it is?
What, that we picked the game and we won? What?
No, that Kelechi Osemele looked like...
my God, I'm so glad. Dude, if I heard his name one more time.
I'm watching that, and they're making a point. Like, Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth, like, what a pickup. They just picked him up off the scrap heap. He was with the Jets, and now he's available. And look, they're running behind him, and he's physical, and he's dominant. I'm thinking to myself, you got to be kidding me. This guy was horrendous for the Jets last season.
I just can't believe Rick said it hurts to watch Kelechi Osemele play. How about Pat Mahomes and Deshaun Watson? Because both of those guys could have been your quarterback.
Yeah.
And you took Jamal Adams, the guy that you eventually traded.
Yeah, but those guys, let's be honest, neither quarterback would be who they are today if the Jets had drafted them. They would have found a way to screw it up.
I don't know. With Pat Mahomes, I can see what you're saying. Not with Deshaun Watson. Not with Deshaun Watson. I just think he's that good.
Could you imagine how much better he could be, though? Feel like Deshaun. I feel like if you put Deshaun Watson in Pat Mahomes' situation, he'd be even better than he is now.
He would be.
Oh, 100%. And he's already a top five quarterback.
He's
one of the five best quarterbacks in the NFL with Bill O'Brien as his head coach / general manager.
You know what I was pleased with last night? I thought for the most part, I thought the game was pretty good. Like, we had this conversation of how it's just going to go out there and it's going to be awful football. There's going to be a million flags. Like, I thought for the most part that was pretty good football last night.
Yeah, I think we were looking at two pretty good teams. Like, everybody's talking about how the Texans are going to take this huge step back. I just don't see that. Like, to me, the Texans are still a club that can compete to win their division and be in the postseason. So, I just, you know what? It was really good football, Dave. It was. Like, without preseason, no games, you know, no OTAs in the offseason, to have the opportunity to watch that kind of performance, I thought it was pretty solid. Not a sloppy football game, not a ton of penalties. I thought it was an entertaining ball game to watch.
Now, I agree with you that I think the Texans are a pretty decent team. Have you seen their schedule the next 3 weeks, though? So they're 0-1. They host Baltimore, go to Pittsburgh, and then play Minnesota. they could very easily be a team looking at 0-4.
They could be, although I don't look at Pittsburgh as as tough of an out as those other three teams. I just don't. And until they prove to me that they got a healthy quarterback that's capable of getting back to what we've known him to be in his prime, then I'm not going to crown the Steelers just yet. Now maybe maybe that's the Baltimore Raven in me talking. I don't know. I don't know if I'm exactly being objective, but I always look for opportunities to throw shade at the Steelers.
The one thing I will say about last night, and there weren't. I mean, you're right. There were. I expected more penalties. Tackling wasn't great. I mean, that clearly is something that will improve as the season goes on. Just because you haven't done it yet.
A lot of footballs last night.
But that's the thing that concerns me about Houston. Offensive line still isn't very good, and on top of it, Duke Johnson's already hurt. David Johnson's been hurt the last couple of years.
Well, he got hurt last night too, right? Didn't they take him out of the game with a hand injury and he finally went back in? Yeah.
Yeah, he had a wrist thing, yeah.
Will Fuller's always hurt. Brandon Cooks is a concussion away from missing the entire season. So, I mean, those.
But he looked fast last night.
He looked real fast.
Brandon Cooks and David Johnson, they both looked like they got some juice. I don't know what Bill O'Brien has been telling them, but they. Listen, man, the Texans, I see what they want to do. I see the offense that they want to become. I mean, when you look at their receivers, it ain't a bad receiving group now. I mean, you got Cooks, you got Fuller, you got Cobb. I mean, you got some pieces that you got.
Did we?
Yeah, but
Chris?
I think the thing is
got something too. So I mean, listen, I you don't have a DeAndre Hopkins. I get that, but it's not like Deshaun Watson is devoid of talent.
No, they're not barren. No, not by any stretch. They still have talent. They still have talent. I got to tell you, watching the Chiefs last night, and you said it, Rick, about how good their offense is. It's hard-pressed to see them not putting up 12, 13, even more wins this year. Like, that's going to be one of your top two or three teams in football. They picked
up
right where they – they're terrific.
They scored 31 unanswered points.
Yep.
I mean, and if DeMarcus Robinson didn't have hands like feet, I mean, it could have been worse. That dude's got brutal hands.
I thought there was also a chance for the Texans when they had that Bernhard McKinney interception in the end zone at the beginning of the fourth quarter. Like, Brad Roby, that was a brutal DPI penalty. That was brutal. I mean,
that wasn't a great call.
You could have kept them from putting points on the board. And at 24-7, you still don't like the Texans' chances, but at least you could make it a game. Like, if you can get that possession, you steal that, you keep them from getting points, and you got the ball on the 25-yard line, driving out, like, at least you got a shot. You know what I'm saying?
But you were right with the game change at the end of the first half. It was, what, 14-7?
Yes.
And the Texans are going down to put points on the board. They missed that field goal. They come down, you know, Kansas City scores, and that's really done. At that
point, here's
the
thing. Your offense
has
to help
you
play defense when you're playing the Chiefs, though, doesn't
it? Of course.
Your offense has to help you. So Bill O'Brien calling three consecutive pass plays and all of them being incompletions, that's absolutely ridiculous, especially when you know you got the ball in field goal territory. You got the ball on the 33-yard line. You call three straight passes? You don't think to yourself once, hey, maybe I should run a little bit of this clock down? Maybe this might be a little bit too much time to leave on the clock? Because you know what? If my kicker does miss a 50-yard shot, they're going to get the ball right at midfield. There's a chance that Pat Mahomes and that explosive Chiefs offense can work it into field goal territory. I mean, listen, if it's a one-possession game at halftime, if you tell Bill O'Brien before the start of that game, it's going to be a one-possession game at halftime, do you think he would sign up and take that? He absolutely would.
He'd probably trade your first-round pick for it.
Probably. But in that moment, you can't have that kind of lapse as a head coach. But that's always been a thing that we've talked about with Bill O'Brien. His game management, it leaves a lot to be desired. Now, from X's and O's, I think he's a solid coach. But his game management and his roster management
are both awful.
They're awful.
His GM skills are absolutely brutal.
Yeah, but I mean, let's be completely honest. Bill O'Brien, he leaves a lot to be desired, right? Especially as a GM. But if the Kansas City Chiefs and Pat Mahomes, and I think Andy Reid said it best after the game, like he almost makes it look so easy where they call a play, and the one thing that people would kind of point to as a criticism of Pat Mahomes is he willing to be patient? You know, will he check the ball down? If he's going to be willing to do what he did last night and go 11, 12 plays, 16 plays, take what the defense has given him, I mean, this is...
Well, what happens when Hilaire gets into the passing game? I don't think he had any catches last night. What happens when they start throwing the ball to him? That offense is... they are terrifying.
But, Dave, in terms of game plan, I think that's how you have to play defense against the Chiefs.
Make him go 12 plays, 70 yards, because
you know they can get explosive plays. You got to stay too high. You got to keep two high safeties, a lot of cover two looks, and you force them to check the ball down. You force them to run the football. Don't give them any quick strikes. You can't. Because you know they'll beat you that way. Like, at least you have a chance of keeping the game close if you play defense like the Texans tried to play defense in the first half. But again, you got to come up with negative plays. Like Jacob Martin getting that sack on the first possession, like, you got to have stuff like that. You got to be able to come up with the interceptions, the strip sacks, the fumbles. You got to do that. If you don't get any takeaways, if you don't force any negative plays, I don't see how you're going to beat that Chiefs offense.
Yeah, I don't think you are. But even we're going to see a lot of what we saw last night this season.
But Dave, even the play design. I mean, you watch, I mean, between, you know, Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy. I mean, that Travis Kelce touchdown.
Oh.
I mean, the play design, and then
the screen to Kelce, where everybody runs wide and they dump it right back to him in the middle of the field, and it's wide open for like a 20-yard
game. Where they went, where they faked the screen to the right, they faked the screen to the left, and then you had the tight end screen right in the middle.
There was no one near him up the middle.
Yep.
Yeah.
The dude can make every single throw, man. Every single, the one that, I mean, his best throw of the night would have been the one that got dropped by DeMarcus Robinson, where he's moving to his left, he's across his body.
That was a dime.
And he throws a seam. And poor DeMarcus Robinson just takes it right off the chops because he can't catch it. But
there was another one where he was in the red zone, Rick. He was sliding to his left, and he threw back across his body, and he hit the receiver on the back shoulder. I mean, he placed the ball the only place where the receiver could get it, in between coverages, and the receiver dropped it. I forgot. I think it was DeMarcus Robinson on that one, too.
Yeah, I'm sure
But,
it
I mean,
was.
like it was a situation where he was throwing it. It's like, how is this guy capable of having that kind of accuracy? It's unbelievable.
He's different level.
Like moving to your left and throwing across your body as a right-handed quarterback, you're not supposed to be able to do that.
Yeah, he's different level. Now, if there's a game, someone's betting on it. Stream Better Days, the new Mike Greenberg-hosted series about epic sports betting stories told by the bettors themselves. Stream new episodes every week only on ESPN+. Plus. All right, you know we're doing a frenzy in the 10 o'clock hour, correct?
Yeah, we talked about it yesterday, yeah.
Yeah, 10:15. So RJ Bell, 10 o'clock. 10:15 frenzy, 10:30 Feinbaum, Jets talk. Are we making picks this year, or is that out the window?
You know how I feel about it. I
you
quit
don't
fantasy
picks this year.
No, I mean, if you guys want to do it, I mean, you still have to pay off your bet. But I mean, if you want to do it, I'll do it.
I mean, I feel we like want to know, right? Have to do picks though. Like, how can we be a sports talk radio show and we don't do picks?
Yeah, we probably should do quick picks.
But Dave and I are 1-0, right?
We have to do picks.
Would you stop? We're not 1-0.
I thought we picked, you asked me yesterday, and I picked the Chiefs.
Yeah, I said, who do you like? And you know what? I'd be 1-0 also, but we're not 1-0.
I'm 1-0. In my mind,
you're
I'm
not
1-0.
No, you
can't count that one.
If I say, who do you like in the game, you say, I think Kansas City wins by double digits. You didn't lock that in as one of your picks. No, you're not 1-0.
I mentally locked it in.
You're deceptive. Chris, how about Joe Judge yesterday, huh? Losing his mind at practice, sending the media out so he could undress his team?
Yeah, he's channeling his inner Bill Parcells with that one, isn't it? I mean, just trying to let the guys know that he's upset about something. I don't really know if it's him truly being upset about the practice or the preparation, Dave, as much as it is about effect and trying to make sure his guys are motivated going into week one. You know what I mean? Like, I don't – you know, we weren't there, so I guess we couldn't tell you what the tone of the practice was. But hearing about a coach doing something like that, I remember when Bill Parcells used to do that with us when I was with the Dallas Cowboys, and veteran players like Keyshawn Johnson and Terry Glenn and Jason Ferguson, guys that have been with him at other places, they said, like, listen, he's going to do some of this for effect. It's not necessarily that we're having a bad practice, but he just wants to make sure that we're motivated. In his mind, that's something that he feels like he has to do. Don't pay any attention to it. Don't let that bother you. Just continue to do what you're doing and get ready to play. Like, I can't judge Joe Judge, no pun intended, but I think that could be a little bit of what's at play here. Because to do something like this with the timing of it going into week one game, like, it just feels like that's the head coach trying to instill that level of urgency in his team because you're getting the regular season kicked off.
That's exactly what it is. I mean, that's reminding these guys about attention to detail and everything else. Make sure everyone's mentally where they need to be for this Monday night.
Look, I don't know if it's going to work or not with him, but for some reason, and I didn't feel this way with Shermer, and I didn't feel this way with McAdoo, I have this feeling that he's going to be a really good head coach at this level.
Well, I think he's going to be a good head coach, Dave, because he's going to trust the people that he has on his coaching staff. I mean, a part of being a good leader is being able to delegate responsibility and trusting Jason Garrett and trusting Patrick Graham to do their jobs as the offensive and defensive coordinators. I think that's a big part of it, man. It really is. Because as a head coach, you can't do everything. You can't micromanage. You got to trust the people that you have in place and be able to bring out the best in them. And so you do want to make sure that there's accountability throughout the organization with both players and coaches. But you got to trust people to be able to do their jobs. And it sounds like he's willing to do that.
Yeah, well, that's what any good CEO would do. All right, let's go. Andy from Merrick on a Friday. I imagine you're going football heavy today, Andy.
Good morning, DCR. Yeah, in watching last night's football game and the remarkable talent of those two quarterbacks, it had me thinking about some quarterbacks of the past. So I have a four-pack of quarterback questions for the three of you.
Okay.
Starting with, this quarterback had the most passing yards in the 2000s, that is, from the year 2000 to 2009.
Oh, God. You think Favre, guys?
2000 to 2009. Is Drew Brees in that conversation, Dave? I know he missed that one season, though.
Yeah, I would say no, because if you miss a year, I don't know how you could be.
Yeah.
What was McNabb's time frame?
This is the first question, so maybe we just don't overthink it. I mean,
should we go Favre?
Andy's being real quiet, too, which I don't necessarily love either.
Usually he gives a hint.
You're overlooking a very obvious guy.
Is it? It can't be.
Is it Peyton?
It is Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
How about for the 1990s? Can you tell me which quarterback had the most passing yards for that decade?
Ooh, the 1990s.
Don't overthink it.
The 90s Montana?
Montana, you think? No. He said don't overthink it. Do we
Marino?
Go Montana? Marino, Montana.
Yeah, Marino.
Is it Brett Favre? Is he in that one?
No, he's being quiet on that one.
Yeah, Favre drafted in the early 90s and didn't really get started for a couple years there. You named him so far. Can you come up with it?
Oh, so we've thrown him at Montana?
Come on, Dave. We named it. Come on.
Steve. No, we didn't say Steve Young. So
it's not
what
Steve
did we
Young.
Say?
We said Elway. We said Montana, and
no,
you said Marino.
Did you say Marino?
Marino.
I said Elway.
You said Elway?
So let's go. The 90s?
Why do I want to? I feel like it.
Should we go with Marino or no?
But he had a season where he played only like five or six games.
Is it Favre? I mean, is it Favre?
No, it's not Favre.
What about Elway?
Very quiet
right
again,
now.
Andy.
Andy, you're killing me right
Lock
now.
Lock integrity, boys. Let's get an answer.
Elway retired after 98, right? After the 98 season?
Yeah, after they won the second Super Bowl. Yeah.
The answer is this man retired after the 99 season.
It's Marino.
It's Marino.
Daniel Constantine Marino Jr. Yeah.
Gotta be Marino, yeah.
All right, most passing yards in the 80s.
Oh, for God's sake.
Again, don't
overthink
it.
I hate these questions.
This should be very obvious.
Fouts?
Is that Montana?
It's got to be Montana.
That's what I'm about to say.
And round it out. This University of Georgia product had the most passing yards for the
1970s.
New York flavor to him.
Kenny Anderson?
No.
No.
New York flavor to him.
New York flavor.
Seventies.
Bunch of Super Bowl appearances.
Super Bowl appearances.
No wins.
Fran Tarkenton?
Francis Asbury Tarkenton.
Asbury?
See, my man.
Yes, right. Sir.
We struggled there today.
Guys, you got it all.
We got to the finish line.
Have a great
line,
weekend. Stay healthy, and let's go, Islanders.
You need that desperately. All right.
That was limping to the finish line.
Yeah, you're not kidding. You know, like the guy who dehydrates and he sees the finish line, but he's on the ground and everyone's running past him?
That was us.
That's what that was today. Before we bring our buddy RJ Bell into the fold, and he's going to join us in just a moment. Right after RJ, we're going football frenzy at 10:15. So let's line them up now so we can say goodbye to RJ and start with the frenzy. 800-919-3776 at Rothenberg ESPN on Twitter. Again, line them up. 800-919-3776 on Twitter at Rothenberg ESPN. Let's bring him in. Been a long time. The world's a lot different than it was last time we spoke. And say good morning to RJ Bell. Good morning, RJ.
Listen, I'm going to keep things the same and start complaining right off the go. Is yesterday on with Mr. Michael K for the first time in, you know, whatever, 5 months. And he comes in with, oh, we're so excited. And literally the great one, RJ Bell, from Mr. Michael K. Here it's like, hey, let's get some callers so we can get RJ out of here as quickly as possible.
I think you're very sensitive, to be honest. I think that you're very, very sensitive.
I am a little bit.
We're happy to have you on. We hope that you're well. Obviously, it's been an unbelievable time in this country, but let's get right to it because we have a lot of stuff we want to tackle with you right now. First of all, before we even start, are you and Canty having some kind of a wager this season?
Well, no, we don't have a wager, Dave, but we do have beef. We got beef still.
Uh-oh.
Because I don't understand why RJ Bell can't respond to me when I'm reaching out to him via social media. If I had your phone number, I would call you. But I don't understand why I can't get a tweet back or DM back. What's up with that, RJ?
Uh-oh.
You know something? I did an experiment, and it was shocking the effect it had. So this is what happened. I had an iPhone 7, right? So the 7 went in the crapper right when COVID started, just started blinking out. So I'm like, okay, there's no COVID. I'm not really leaving the house, so I don't need I got a landline. I'm fine, right? And then I loved it. I loved not having a phone. So then when things started to open up, I said, I'll just wait for the 11. Is that what's coming out? I'm like, I'll wait for that. And then it got moved to October, and I thought, I'm going to stick this thing out. So many people are mad at me because they're texting the old number. It's just gone. I guess it was a failure. Mr. Canty, I apologize, and you certainly can have my home number, private number, and I would always try to respond. I mean, I'm hit or miss on those things, but
sure, I got you. I
certainly
got you.
Not
but
personal.
But we got to talk off the air, though.
Absolutely, but I'll say this. Is I was going to make an announcement on what I talked to you, Dave, about. Is that okay to do now, or do we want to wait?
Ahead. Yeah,
okay.
Go ahead.
All right. So, you know, I did. You know, Canty won the first year, and it went to his wonderful charity. I mean, it was a very lucky win, but he won. but then last year, it was just total domination. I won, but I haven't, you know, gotten around to worrying about where the 5,000 goes. So here's what I want to do: is I want to have the audience give us ideas between now and next week, but a New York City based COVID charity will let, you know, not a vote as much as let's see a good idea and we'll announce it next week. How's that sound, Canty?
That works for me. I mean, I have to rip up the check I already made out to your charity of choice, which was the Boys and Girls Club, but I can do that. That's not a problem.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the world has changed, and I do love the Boys and Girls Club because to me, when you're a kid, you got to get the best we can, get a fair break. But, I mean, obviously New York's been hit. I love New York, and, you know, I guess I won, so I get to decide. So New York it is.
You certainly do. All right, let's hit you with some questions here and go rapid fire as we can. First one from me, how do you think the spreads change with the lack of fans and lack of, I guess, a home field advantage, right? Like last night, a raucous crowd normally, nothing. Saints, you're going to get nothing. Seattle, you're going to get nothing. Like, what kind of a number change is that on these games, RJ?
Typically, home field is 3. Now, there's occasions with the Saints specifically, Seattle, Green Bay falls in this category. Minnesota just does. They're like the next team. It's above 3, right? Then you've got your, you know, 3.5, let's say. Then you've got your bad teams with home field, the less impact. Jacksonville is an example. Tennessee's had a bad home field for a long time. Okay, so that's 2.5. What we're doing here is moving between 1.5 and 2. So we literally are cutting it in half or a little less. I strongly think it should be 2, maybe even 2.5. And here's why quickly. I think, and again, this is why I love Canty. I can get his opinion on this. I believe it's not going to be so much home field advantage, which will be some of that. You're, you know, familiar with the surroundings. Though remember now, they're forcing the NFL to stay in a hotel and such. I don't know what the Giants and Jets typically do when they play at home. Do they go to a hotel or do they stay at home?
They go to hotels.
They do. Okay. So, Chris, how many teams would you guess of the 32 did that last year?
I want to say the majority of them, RJ. You're probably talking about 20 to 25 teams.
Okay, so it's only going to be that 7 to 10 teams or so that are going to have to change this year. But I believe there's going to be a greater road team disadvantage. Whatever it takes to travel, it's going to take so much more with the COVID precautions. And I think especially the first couple road games, it's going to be arduous and it's going to be hard. And I think the teams that are not as good operationally, like the way I explained it is if you could envision the team maybe fires their bus driver and forgets to hire a new one, like the Bengals maybe, that kind of team's going to struggle, I think, even more traveling. A team like the Patriots, they're going to have it figured out before the first time.
RJ, does new coach, new offensive coordinator, new defensive coordinator, does that get baked into these numbers?
Not sufficiently. So we did a preview podcast, right? And we had a guy on, a big former bookmaker, and he said, I feel like I'm talking about COVID every team, like we were, you know, previewing the teams. And it's like he's stopped talking about it as much because you get bored of it, right? But it's probably even more than we're talking about it. And I mean, if you listen to like the Mangini's, you listen to the former coaches that are now in media, it's all they talk about. And again, I love having Chris here. I mean, if you guys had, you know, one of your years, the lack of prep, you know, the amount of prep they have this year. I mean, how much do you think, I'm sure you've talked about this, so maybe succinctly, how much would it have affected things?
I would think it would affect things a lot, RJ.
Yeah. And I think especially, and as we just ticked off, new coach, especially if there's new coordinators too, which almost always there is often, yeah. But in Dallas, there's not on offense, which is kind of unusual. Rookie quarterbacks, even Tom Brady changing teams, you know, quarterbacks changing teams. And here's what's not being discussed enough. Changes on the O-line. Mm-hmm. So Jets, in theory, have upgraded their O-line, right? But yep. But I think the first four or six games, it might be – maybe the first three, it's worse than last year. Then it gets to be even. Then the second half of the year, it's better. I think a lot of changes on the O-line. I think the Cleveland Browns really upgraded. I don't think it shows for a while because of that cohesion won't be there.
And I was going to ask you about that with the Jets, RJ, because they're one of four teams in the last decade that have five new starters on the offensive line in week one from the five that they had the previous year. So how does that affect how you view the line between them and the Buffalo Bills this weekend?
I think you would have been chomping at the bit, right? I mean,
absolutely.
Because, I mean, the thing that always blows my mind is when they say a guy changes from left tackle to right tackle, it's like, oh, yeah, it takes about a year and a half. You know, like to me, when I was a kid, you know, I lined up, put my hand down on the right, but obviously this is Picasso versus finger painting. And this the sophistication and nuance on the offensive line, I think since the last collective bargaining agreement, you know, not the one just the last year, but like what, 5 years before, and they cut down on practices and preseason work, I think the line play has suffered since then. Now, mm-hmm. Imagine this year and imagine all of those changes on the O-line. Man, I would look at maybe Jets team total under. You can't think the Jets are going to score much in this game.
No, I don't think anybody believes the Jets offense is going to put up a lot of points in this game. All right, before we let you go, RJ, are we back on with the two of you? Are we going with the wagers right now?
No, you know, remember, Dave, here's what we said. What we said was Chris was going to give his three picks, and I can take out his bad ones. And we'll pick one game a week for the audience that we agree on and see how it does this year.
So you guys are not going head-to-head.
I mean, we did it, right? We did it.
2 years. That's yeah. Over. Okay.
And again, I think, to be honest, I might randomly see Chris somewhere, and he's so mad at me in the middle of that, he'll kill me.
He could pummel you, yeah.
So, I mean, not pummel me. He's going to pick me up and spin me like a top. So, I mean, I'm 190 pounds, but still, that's a top to him. So, no, I think we're good. But Chris, you love that idea. Give me your three, and I'll give a best bet.
Yeah, I like the idea of us collaborating to come up with a best bet, and then
all right,
just keep
so who
track
you got
of
this
it
week
as the season goes along.
Who do you got this week?
Well, we have to rely on RJ for that, right?
No, you're going to pick your best three, and then he's going to pick the one that he likes.
Well, Dave, yeah. I haven't gotten to that point, Dave. You're kind of putting me on the spot right now.
Okay, all right. Well, let's do the – how's this sound? Is, Dave, if you don't mind, send me his three. I'll tweet it out at RJ in Vegas. And Chris, you know, happily can if he wants, and we'll do it that way this week. And I got a best bet myself, which I'll give my own every week, too. So we'll have two of them.
Oh, two best bets. All right. So Chris, you text me. We'll get it out there on Twitter. RJ's going to pick it tomorrow morning on the show, mm-hmm. and then you can do that moving forward on Fridays with RJ. But before we let you go, what is your pick of the week, RJ?
I love this game, and I rarely bet with the public here, but this is a public betting. I love the Arizona Cardinals. Arizona's plus 7 against the 49ers. All right, so obviously 49ers have disruption at wide receiver. I think that's going to be a bigger deal than people think. But that's not why I like it. We got, obviously, Kingsbury, a second-year coach now. Two times they faced the 49ers. Now, DVOA is the Football Outsiders Analytics, and they actually grade the offense of every team the entire season. So 16 games, let's say, of the regular season, there's 512 offenses that get graded. When Arizona played San Francisco, so they had two of those were their offense against San Fran, right? Game one, game two. They were ranked 10th and 11th out of 512 teams. Literally, 10th and 11th. There's something schematically about what Kingsbury's doing against this San Fran D that they just got them figured out. And, I mean, how can you have literally the Super Bowl runner-up level defense that was mighty good most of the year, San Fran? You got an Arizona team that won, what, four games or five games? And somehow it's literally the 10th out of 512 and the 11th. This is the matchup edge of the week. We're getting to 7. I think this line's dropping. Arizona plus the touchdown.
All right. Good stuff, RJ Bell. I will talk to you tomorrow morning for the hour. We got it. Arizona plus the 7 is the line that you like this week. We appreciate it. We're happy to have you back. Oh. We'll talk to you next week.
Oh, there you go. I appreciate it, guys. Have a good day.
All right. Good stuff. That, of course, is RJ Bell. So Arizona plus the 7 is his pick of the week. All right.
I got a best bet. I got a best bet.
What's your best bet?
RJ ain't no 190 pounds.
You don't think?
No chance.
You go over? over the 190?
No, I'm going over. I'm going over.
That's funny. All right, Islanders in the Stanley Cup Conference Finals, Rick, and MSG Plus has complete live coverage before and after every game. Tonight, 7:30, get ready for Game 3 against the Lightning with the team that's been with you all season long, Shannon, Butch, and AJ. They preview the matchup on Islanders Game Night. Then immediately after Game 3, tune back to MSG Plus for our complete coverage, including in-depth analysis and player interviews, your team, your network, MSG Plus, your home for Islanders Stanley Cup playoff coverage before and after every single game. And, of course, you can hear the Islanders right here tonight in a must-win game at 7:30 on 98.7 ESPN. Santi, let's start it out. The first one of the season.
A football frenzy.
You could say that 10,000 times and it still wouldn't be enough.
It fires me up, man.
I love
it.
Say it one more time.
A football frenzy. Any team, any player, any question.
800-919-3776 at Rothenberg ESPN. I have a lot of tweets rolling in. We go rapid fire with the frenzy in just a moment, but before we start the frenzy, SNY and 98.7 ESPN have a Jets prize package for you. Tune in to SNY, the TV home of the Jets, for Jets Post Game Live with Bart Scott, Jonas Schwartz, and Gene Coakley following Sunday's game against the Bills. Catch the Jets quote of the game then. Tune into our show 9 to 11 Monday for your official chance to win official Jets merchandise courtesy of 98.7 ESPN and SNY. Jets Post Game Live only on SNY. Get your New York sports here. All right, you guys ready? First one of the season, 800-919-3776. A lot of tweets are rolling in already. Let's roll along here. Penske tweets in, Chris, which rookie wide receiver is going to have the biggest impact? Judy, CeeDee Lamb, Justin Jefferson, or Pittman on the Colts?
Man, I got a scary feeling that it's going to be Jerry Jeudy. I like what I saw from Drew Locke at the end of last year, and I just feel like you got him a true number one receiver, a guy that's a very good route runner from day one. I just feel like Jerry Jeudy is going to be one of those instant impact players. I know a lot of people that go with CeeDee Lamb, because he's with America's team, and he'll have a lot of opportunities in that offense. But I just feel like Jerry Jeudy is going to get an awful lot of targets this year.
All right. NYG of the year wants to know, Rick, better season statistically, Sam Darnold or Daniel Jones?
I would probably say Daniel Jones just because he has better weapons. I mean, he got one of the best running backs in the league. I mean, the offensive line should be better, I would imagine. And if, you know, if they stay healthy, I mean, would you disagree with that?
No, I 100% agree. I mean, listen, if you flip-flop them, if you put Jones on the Jets, I think that Darnold would have better numbers. But I think the situation that he's in, I think it's clear to me that Jones, I expect to have the better statistics this season. Birdman JR wants to know, following up on Darnold, over under 20 touchdown passes for Darnold this year.
Over.
Over.
Over. Okay. Yeah. KRZ. Who do you think has a better season, Matt Ryan or Big Ben?
Matt Ryan.
Yeah, I would agree with that. He's younger, right? I mean, Roethlisberger coming off, you know, major.
Plus, he's got Julio Jones.
Yeah, which never hurts. MVP Andy wants to know: do you see the Jets going 9-7 this season?
No.
I don't think anybody sees.
I mean,
the Jets
I think it would be a successful season if they go 500.
If the Jets go 8-8, you'd be thrilled right now.
Yeah.
With two first-round picks coming up, you'd be thrilled. Fat Strong Guy wants to know, which quarterback in the NFC East, Rick, do you think has the best statistical season?
NFC East, best statistical season? I would say Dak.
Yeah, I sadly have to agree with you. Very, very sadly. Senor D wants to know, Cam Newton over under 30 passing touchdowns for the season. He's not going to throw for more than 30.
That's a high number. Now, can he combine for 30 touchdowns?
The question is, does he throw for more than 30? We all agree it won't be more than 30 throwing, but yeah, how about
no,
that?
Let could he be it. Like 25-5? Absolutely.
Yeah, he could do that. Let's go to the phones, 800-919-3776. James, Long Island, you're on the frenzy. James, go.
Hey, guys. What do you think about the Seahawks' chances to win the NFC West this year?
I like their chances. I mean, they were
A
yard and a bad call away from winning the division last year.
Their offense is only going to get better, and then of course with the addition of Jamal Adams, that defense is going to be. I think that's going to be a very disruptive unit. I mean, I think Jamal Adams has a real chance of being a defensive player of the year candidate. That's how good I think he could be with Pete Carroll.
Wow, if he is at that level over there in Seattle, yes, they're going to be a tough team to beat and not win this division. All right, real quick, Omar in East Brunswick, you're on the frenzy.
What improvements do you guys want to see in Sam Darnold this year? Love you guys.
I'd like to see health. I mean, that's the first one. I like him to see health. See him
don't
healthy
throw the
for
ball
16.
To the other team.
Exactly. Yes.
How about that? Just
good,
don't throw the ball to the
advice,
other team.
Good piece of advice, Chris.
Yeah.
No, that's it. Decision making. Yep. Stay healthy in your decision making.
Coco Pebbles, a delicious cereal, would like to know, do the Jets have the worst skill position players in all the NFL?
Not according to Don. Don kind of took a shot at us yesterday, but I wish we had more time because I wanted to get him on the phone with us today.
Well, what did he say?
He said he was listening to us and we were being so negative about the talent around Sam Darnold. It's not like the Jets are bereft of talent at the skill position.
Well,
at the skill position,
compare him to any other team, it pretty much is though.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, I was listening to it and I'm sitting here looking. I don't know. I mean, you tell me. I don't know. There's not many teams that have. That have much worse.
No. Yeah. I mean, I think Jacksonville skill position players are actually better. Even releasing Fournette, their receivers are pretty good.
Yeah, listen, I mean, if you're going to make the argument last year that Tom Brady didn't have enough offensive weapons, I mean, how could you make the argument that Sam Darnold does?
Yeah, I don't like that take at all from Don.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, no, not even a little bit, Don.
Shut up!
All right, we'll be quiet now. And that ends a Friday frenzy for us here on 98.7 ESPN. Well done, everyone around. All right, Paul Feinbaum's going to join us next, and then after that, we got to get into the Jets, who have their first game. I mean, this is amazing. Their first game Sunday, 11 o'clock pre, kickoff at 1 o'clock. But the pregame, Chris, right after your show, which I just noticed, Mike Tenenbaum is joining you in the
year. Yeah, we got Mike T on the show this year, so I'm excited about it, man. We kick it off on Sunday morning at 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock to 11, then the Jets pre, and then the Jets kick it off at 1 o'clock up in Buffalo. One of our favorites joins us here, Paul Feinbaum on 98.7. Obviously, crazy times in college football. A couple of conferences not even playing. Paul, how you doing? We appreciate a couple minutes. And what is now locked in is a 10:30 spot with you every Friday.
Yeah, no, it will be a little easier. I won't be running through airports trying to grab you this year. But there's still a college football season, you're right. And there's still a chance that the Big Ten will play. I mean, in the last month, in my history of covering college football, I've never seen a story that has been more unnerving and dysfunctional and hard to explain than what they did exactly 1 month ago when they shut football down. And since then, that there has been an uprising a day.
So realistically, do you think we're going to see Big Ten chance, Pac-12 no? Like, where are we with this now?
Yeah, I don't think the Pac-12 has any chance. I mean, listen, the Western states are in a world of hurt, from wildfires to COVID restrictions to everything imaginable. But there's still a big move in the Big Ten, and it's almost impossible to predict. You have the president of the United States who is actively campaigning. He was in Michigan yesterday trying to push the politicians there, which has not worked. The Rutgers president came out last night and said, we're not playing. And he accused the president of cheap politics, which is shocking to me that anyone would accuse a politician of that. But, yeah, I still think you could see a revote next week, whether it was 11-3 against playing 1 month ago. I think it would be closer now, but you know what's really amazing is that the messaging of this has been so bad that, I mean, yesterday Ryan Day, the coach at Ohio State, literally came after the Big Ten commissioner, and this is the kind of thing we have never seen before. I mean, you may get this in professional sports, but you don't get it in college sports very often.
Oh, because it is professional sports, not with all the money. Paul, I mean, what was the mindset of Kevin Warren? Did he assume that, you know, he'd be the hero? He'd postpone the season first, and then everyone would fall in behind him?
I think that's exactly it. Now, I am not trying to tell anyone that, you know, the country's in great shape on COVID, especially people in New York who have been through the worst of it, even though it's a lot better now, to say the least. But a month ago in the Midwest, in the South, in the West, things were much worse from a numbers standpoint. It didn't look like it was going to be possible. So I think Kevin Warren, who is the commissioner, and by the way, in his first year after replacing a guy who had been there for 25 years, in Jim Delaney, said, you know what, I'm going to be the smartest guy in the room. We're going to shut down early. We got the medical and science advice. And, you know, the Pac-12 followed suit in 45 minutes, and then everybody else said, hold on a second, we're not going anywhere yet. And I think what the Big 12 and the especially the SEC, which is not starting for two more weeks, I think they were gambling on the same thing that the NFL gambled on by not playing preseason games, that maybe by now it would be better. And in some ways, it is better. It doesn't mean it will stay better, but it's better today. So you're seeing football. I mean, we saw a game last night. We saw a couple of a group of five games last week. And by the end of tomorrow, we'll have seen Notre Dame play, Clemson play, Syracuse play, and it will almost seem normal, other than the stands are either empty or virtually empty.
Paul, earlier this week, James Franklin was on ESPN, and he was critical of the lack of guidance from the Big Ten in the wake of canceling the season. And from what it sounds like from you, he has a legitimate beef or legitimate gripe with Kevin Warren. Am I reading you right in what you're saying?
Yeah, no, I think you are. And When it first happened, it seemed like everyone was just complaining to complain. But a month later, you have to sympathize with James Franklin. You have to sympathize with Harbaugh and Ryan Day. And I mean, not only are they trying to keep players intact in the event that the season starts late or they play in the spring, which they probably wouldn't keep anybody worth a flip on the team. They're also in the middle of recruiting. Remember, the recruiting schedule moved up to December 2 years ago. So, I mean, if you're out there for Ohio State or Penn State and you're recruiting against Alabama and Clemson and Oklahoma, I mean, this is being used against you, whether it should be or not. I mean, come on. I mean, we are talking about a global pandemic here, but this is college football. It's cutthroat. And if you're not playing, you look bad right now.
Paul Feinbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. I was going to ask you about the Heisman Trophy, and I said, I'm going to save that for Canty. Let him do that with his question. But is it Clemson, Alabama? I mean, with no Ohio State, at least right now, are these the best two teams in college football heading into a crazy season?
Unquestionably, and I really did think Ohio State was a major contender. I mean, that's not an upset. They were in the playoffs last year, but you know, with Justin Fields coming back, with the normal, I mean, they lose, you know, they lost Chase Young last year. They lose players every year, most of the year before. I mean, they are a recruiting machine, or have been. They may have had the best team in the country. And by the way, had the season been normal, which sounds silly to say now, they would have been playing at Oregon this weekend, which, you know, had they gone out there and won, that's a huge win. That could have propelled them to number one in the country and really put them in a great spot. So without them, it's really, I think it's primarily like it has been so often, a two-man race. And, you know, after that, it's hard to say. I mean, the one thing that, and I think this would be applicable to pro football as well, but you just don't know what you're going to get week to week. I mean, with this contact tracing, with protocols being very interpretive, I mean, you could see some major upsets. And also, normally we use the cliches like, man, it's tough to go to play at Oklahoma or at LSU or at Florida. You don't know right now. I mean, nobody knows what these environments are going to be like. I mean, you watched the game last night, not exactly a home field advantage. That will factor in at times, and at others, you could have huge upsets in college football.
Paul Feinbaum joins us here on the show. Paul, last one from me. Were you surprised at all, or maybe that's not the best way to put it? What are your thoughts on what Lincoln Riley had to say about not revealing? He's not going to share the COVID-19 test results because he doesn't want to give it. He believes it's a competitive disadvantage.
It's pretty disturbing. And, you know, it's been said, and it will be said many more times. I mean, we're not talking about trying to hide an ankle injury here. We're talking about an infectious disease. But, you know, instead of pointing my arrows at Lincoln Riley, I think he pretty well speaks for everyone. I mean, college coaches are not taking this very seriously. I don't care what they say publicly. I mean, I've spoken to enough of them. I've heard enough stories. They try to downplay it like a politician or some of the politicians do. And, they don't want to give anybody an advantage. So, I think we are in for a season of deceitfulness and coaches being disingenuous and bordering on criminal, not in the literal sense, but in the philosophical sense, in terms of what they try to hide. And, you know, they better hope, and let's all hope that nobody suffers as a result, but I'm not so confident that we're not going to see some cataclysmic event in college football this year, which turns the whole thing upside down.
Paul, assuming that we're able to get through the entire regular season, what happens to the college football playoff with potentially two of the Power Five conferences not playing this fall?
Yeah, they're still scheduled to have it on New Year's Day, and then the finals on January 11th. Now, I interviewed the Big 12 commissioner last night, Bob Bowlesby, and I asked him, I said, what happens if the Big 10 starts late? And I was shocked. He said he would not rule out, allowing or voting to allow the Big 10 in late, you know, with a partial schedule. So, I mean, I as crazy as it sounds, if the Big Ten somehow starts in late October and got eight games in, I think they would probably factor in. Other than that, we will see the three major conferences, the Big 12, the SEC, and the ACC, and then is there somebody coming from the next level? Is there a Cincinnati or a UCF or a Memphis or somebody like that? I think it's unlikely because those schools would not have enough of a quality win, but it will be a wild roller coaster ride. I mean, in every sport, but I think college football will be the most bizarre.
Yeah, this will be a season like we've never, ever seen before. Paul, we're glad you're going to be with us every Friday, leading us along in this crazy college football world. Good stuff. We'll talk to you next week.
Guys, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Absolutely. That, of course, is Paul Feinbaum. Now, streaming Disney's new movie Mulan, experience the legend of Mulan as she fights to defend her family and the kingdom, available to Disney Plus subscribers who unlock premier access. I want to remind you, you can listen to us anywhere. Click Listen Live at ESPNNewYork.com, find 98.7 ESPN on the ESPN app or the TuneIn app, or simply tell your smart speaker, play 98.7 ESPN. At 98.7 ESPN New York, we go where you go. All right, I got my picks ready to go. We'll get to that in about 3 minutes. But Rick, your Jets. Jets, Bills, Sunday, 1 o'clock. I mean, you got to be excited. Even if you're nervous, it's a new offensive line, all that. You don't love the weapons with this team. It's opening day for your Jets on Sunday.
Opening day, baby. Everyone starts 0-0. Everyone's got a chance, Dave. Everyone has a chance. Jets pants are already laid out. Kids got theirs. I got
not,
mine.
Not according to Dan Graziano and RJ Bell.
God.
Everybody we talk to says the same exact thing about the 2020 Jets. The same exact thing.
Well, hey, I mean, you guys don't make it easy. You guys do not make it easy to be positive.
Well, I do nothing. Honestly, I've done nothing. All I've done is talked about it, and you're the one with this negative tone about the Jets all the time. I haven't done that.
I'd like to be pleasantly surprised. I don't want to get my hopes up like so high that, you know, after week one, I'm dead inside like you usually get. So I want to give myself like, okay, it could be bad, but all of a sudden, you know, come Sunday, they surprise me. And then I'm
so
excited.
So you're using the reverse psychology on yourself?
Yes. Correct.
Okay. Is that what you... Like, if I say they're going to be bad and they go out and they play well, then I'll be happy.
Well, yeah, but they're not giving me, like, from what we've heard and what we've seen over the last year, then what we heard throughout, you know, training camp. And then I'm reading yesterday that Adam Gase was talking about Buffalo, and he's like, yeah, sometimes it feels like they got 12 or 13 guys playing defense. Oh, because that makes me feel good about it.
The defense is good.
Yeah, but your head coach isn't supposed to say that. Feels like there's 13 guys out there.
So me and my quarterback are seeing ghosts. Back to see ghosts. No. Yeah.
We know what this comes down to, though. Good. We know. We know what the season's about. It's not about necessarily wins and losses. It's about the production and maturation of Sam Darnold.
Exactly. That's
how many Jets seasons are we going to say that about, Dave? We've been saying that the last 5 years.
As many as it takes.
We'll say it again this year, and then hopefully, could you imagine if we're sitting here a year from right now and saying, well, this is about the maturation of Sam Darnold because we need to see what he is in year four. We haven't seen that in 3 years. No, this is the season. And I'm not saying he's got to be the quarterback he's going to wind up being, but you need to see a better version of Sam Darnold this year than you've seen the first 2 years. You have to.
We all agree with that. We all agree with that. Does he have enough around him to do that? That's the question.
That is the question. And how good is the offensive line going to be? Because we know the receivers are not great. I mean, they might be okay. Crowder, Mims, Perryman, Herndon,
Mims.
Griffin.
What are you saying, Mims? Did you not see what just happened with them? I mean, again, going back to
how got hamstring strains. I saw.
No, strings. Yeah, it was hamstring. Now it's hamstrings.
I said hamstring strains. Yes, both hamstrings now.
Sam Donald will be hamstring.
Oh, he's hamstrung this season. But it all comes down to the fact that what can the offensive line be? I mean, if Becton is a good left tackle right away, and I'm not saying he will be, but if he is, that's a tremendous advantage for this young quarterback.
And what's the reality of that, though, Dave?
Probably little.
Okay, I mean, at some point, do I feel like at some point during the season, this offensive line will come together and be better than it was? Or be better than it was over the last couple years? Absolutely, I feel that way. But I don't necessarily know if that's the case early on in the season.
No, I think both teams are going to suffer from that. I think the Giants and Jets will suffer from the same thing where the offensive line. I mean, Chris, you said it. You have five new guys on this offensive line. Five new starters on this offensive line. How can you be good week one?
No, it's going to be hard to be good week one. And we know out of all the position groups on a football team, that group relies the most on continuity and communication. Like, you have to have that rapport, and you're not going to be able to develop that if you don't have live game action. And without having the benefit of preseason games, it's going to be tough to get that up to speed in time to really have a positive impact on Sam Darnold doing his thing.
All right, Sunday, 11 o'clock, right after Chris's show from 8 to 11. Then it's the Jets pre at 11, and then, of course, the Jets game at 1. Santi, music. It's time for NFL picks. We each have 30 seconds I've allotted us. Rick, would you like to go first, second, or third?
I would like to go third. Okay. Since I've already got one pick right with the Kansas City game.
No, you have not. I'll go first quickly. I'm going to take Detroit -3 against Chicago. I do not believe in Trubisky. I think Stafford's a terrific quarterback, and haven't seen him play in a while. So I'll take Detroit -3. Sadly for you, Rick, I'm going to take Buffalo -6.5. I think they beat up on the Jets this weekend. And because I have to and I want to, give me the Rams +3 Sunday Night Football against the overrated Dallas Cowboys. Lock them down, 3-0, start the season.
All right, Dave, I'm going to start out with my first pick. If it's good enough for RJ Bell, it's good enough for me. I'm taking the Arizona Cardinals in the points against San Francisco. I've been saying it for the last year. I think Tom Brady has more left in the tank than Drew Brees. We'll get the chance to see that on display. I'm taking the Bucs +3.5. And, Dave, I got a feeling that this is the season Big Blue gets it turned around, yes, and it starts on Monday night. I'm taking the Giants +6.
All right, fellas, since I'm already 1-0, I only have to give two picks. I'm going to start with
three.
I'm going to start with the Tennessee Titans. I'm going to take Tennessee, lay the 2 points. Denver dealing with injuries. Cortland Sutton's banged up, and I think Tennessee's going to be able to run the football. I'm going to take that if I die, I die. Ugh. Kirk Cousins minus the 2.5. And I think the Patriots will win, but not by 6.5. I think Miami covers the 6.5, so I'll take Miami plus the 6.5.
All right, there's our three picks. We'll
DCR is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Catch them weekday mornings at 9 on 98.7 ESPN.